Welcome, fans, new listeners and all, to Vancouver Current Worldwide, and thank you. Today, we're going to be discussing artificial intelligence, AI, and what that means for us, and whether we should be concerned. Joining us from Calgary, Canada, our regular guest speaker, Spencer, welcome.
Hello, Ray, and hello to all the listeners and fans of Vancouver Current Worldwide.
The China Image Problem podcast got quite a bit of feedback, Spencer, with most listeners agreeing with your general position. Good job. There's a reason you're a fan favorite. Maybe it's the straight shooting nature of your town there.
That's great to hear, Ray, because when it comes to straight shooting, it's what we're known for here in the prairies.
You know, we hear about it all the time. Machine learning, deep learning, big data, neural networks, the nomenclature goes on. But exactly how, in concrete terms, will this change our lives? AI is already here. It's everywhere. It's being used in every field imaginable. Machines that can build our homes from scratch and can grow our food more efficiently. Soon, sensor-loaded driverless trucks that will deliver avocados from Mexico to Canada without ever stopping. Spencer. First, they came for the truck drivers, but I didn't complain because my avocados arrived faster and cheaper. Next, they called me in for an early performance review. Should we all worry about future employability, or will enough jobs be created?
Ray, you know, smartphones put a lot of companies that made flashlights, alarms, cameras out of business. But they also created a lot of jobs in programmers and app developers. I think we need to pay attention to the changes in our employment mix and have our institutions of learning and training do a more timely and efficient job of training and educating our workforce.
It's not just robots that can work 24/7 with next to zero supervision and no complaints in factories, where they don't even need lighting or heating to function for them to do their job. Even professions where a high level of expertise has been acquired over years, even decades, even those professions aren't immune.
That's right, Ray. I understand that soon robotic surgeons will be able to perform with laser precision even in the most remote regions of the world. Holistic, proactive, robotic doctors well beyond today's telemedicine. Doctors that work without fatigue, without error, and that are highly specialized in multiple disciplines. We're close to the sci-fi diagnostic tools we've seen on like Star Trek. We're closer than we know.
Wow, that'd be like a doctor that's an eye specialist, ear and a back specialist rolled in one. That could do like the blood tests and x-rays, for example, and examine the results all on the spot.
That's it. Yes, exactly.
Wow. You know, about 3 years ago, I had a job interview with an international news and financial intelligence company, whose name I probably shouldn't mention here. I almost got the job, by the way. The guy with the accounting background got the job instead. But anyways, the position was to sell AI solutions to companies that used in-house lawyers or law firms. So this software essentially would make highly accurate predictions on the outcome of any case before it got to court, like 80% of the time or 85% of the time, 9 times out of 10, and thus eliminating the need for legal advice in many scenarios for a fraction of the price of a real lawyer. Its data was comprised of all case law history, jurisprudence, et cetera, et cetera. The list of uses and applications for AI is absolutely endless.
Wow. The more data and artificial intelligence has, the better it can perform. Currently, AIs have access to the Internet of Things, or IoT as it's called, big data, and 5G. IoT, by the way, allows our gadgets to communicate with each other without human instruction. AIs will now become far more sophisticated and widespread with the access to data and our devices.
Well, according to the New Scientist, an Oxford and Yale University survey conducted with over 350 AI researchers concluded that, quote, there's a 50% chance that machines will outperform humans in all tasks within 45 years. Have you ever heard of the term technological singularity?
I have, Ray. Isn't that the point in time where AIs basically surpass us?
That's exactly right. And it means it surpasses us in everything. I'll know when we're there when a machine cuts my hair. That's my Turing test. What's yours?
For me, I'll know we're there when on my way home from work, my refrigerator sends a message to me and my car pops up on my infotainment screen that I need milk and oranges. So, I guess we're there, Ray. I guess we're there.
You know, the survey also concludes that machines are predicted to be better than us at translating languages by 2024, writing high school essays by 2026, driving a truck by 2027, working in retail by 2031, writing a best-selling book by 2049, and surgery by 2053. In fact, all human jobs will be automated within the next 120 years.
Ray, that's interesting. By the way, do you have a timeline on when AIs will solve poverty or conflict between nations or world hunger? I didn't think so. We need to re-examine what AIs are working on and have them work on issues humanity continues to struggle with. Issues that once solved will move us forward as a species.
Well, the one thing that we can be sure of, you might have heard about it. Well, the machines and robots will be taxed. Have you heard about this?
No, actually, I haven't, Ray.
Yeah, I think Bill Gates and some other some big shots have gone on about the need for taxing machinery. It's a very real concept, right? Oh. Anyways, if machines can grow our food, make our clothes, build our houses, and improve our infrastructures, find cures and treatments, and arrange for our transport and be taxed, what work will be left for us to do? Could be good news for the large number of people who don't like their jobs or are just plain not engaged. Will this necessitate a universal basic income? I think it might.
If AIs can remove some of the stress of everyday life, such as food, shelter, clothing, that's a good thing. The operative words are some of. I think we all need to have a job or a mission that we can focus on and move forwards to. I don't like the vision of a universal layabout system. If AIs can help us figure out exactly what professions we'd be happiest and best suited for, would we have time for like sculpture, sports, you know, raising our kids? Or maybe we just spend more time just sleeping and drinking.
Maybe. Yeah. You know, I was in a restaurant in Chinatown in Calgary. It's a sushi place. Food was so-so, not that good, but it was all right. But what was fascinating was, this was pre-COVID, was that you'd walk in, the place was packed, and you sat down, and you have basically a like an iPad where you order your food. And then the food comes on a tray, whizzing down. It was like a high-speed train carrying your food to your kind of these rails next to your booth, right?
Wow.
Very slick-looking train, yeah. And what was interesting about the place, Spencer, was that there were no waiters or waitresses, period. And then when you got the bill, you're like, wow, this is like way cheaper. I kind of enjoyed not having that a human serving me. First of all, my food came faster. It's cleaner. There's nobody, you know, breathing over the tray as they're bringing the food over. You don't have to tip. And the food was the bill was cheaper. It was quite a pleasant experience. I didn't expect that at all. I was always thinking, you know, maybe, I always want to be served by a human, this and that. And I've kind of changed my position on that to be. Sucks for the people working in these positions. Like all of us, I think all jobs are threatened. But, you know, for some people, their profession is their identity. If you take that away from them, they're lost. They don't know what to do. Do you know some people like that?
Oh, yeah. I think I'm working with some of them, Ray. Yeah, definitely.
You know, and then there's some people. Yeah. And then there's some people that view their jobs as a form of indentured servitude also. Do you know anyone like that?
Yeah, me.
You know, one wonders if the change we're about to undergo is as profound as was the switch from hunting and gathering to farming in the ancient Near East. I think AI is a bigger deal than the printing press. The printing press, in my opinion, was as big a deal as the internet. AI is bigger. I'm not sure where to place it yet. We've yet to see where it'll take us. Maybe it's as big a deal as the Flint.
Yeah, Ray, you know what? I'll give it to you. The wheel, numbers, the alphabet, farming, steam engines, space exploration, those are all big deals. Ray, for me, you're going to have to elaborate a little bit more on our changes from hunting and gathering to farming, though.
Well, sure. We were hunters and gatherers for 150,000 years. And it's only beginning in the last 5,000 years. It began in the Near East, where we've opted for settled living. It's been a gradual process for most of us to move out of like hunting and gathering. But you still find, like, you probably see the Kalahari Bushmen in Namibia. Like, you've seen those shows on National Geographic.
Yeah, National Geographic.
Yeah, there's still some remaining hunters and gatherers. But the benefits of farming and having a stable food supply were immediately evident with the, advent of farming. But it also resulted in earth-shaking changes for all involved. Settled living, I'm talking about. For example, our concept of the family unit changed. When we were living as hunters and gatherers, a child would be born into the tribe. And of course, when we moved into settled living, non-nomadic lifestyle, was born the nuclear family or the extended family, with all the hereditary rules and marriage and all the heartache that ensued. But as well, our concept of political structure changed from a democratic hunting and gathering model to a top-down rule that was kind of necessitated by the social organizations that had to be created. Labor changed also. Socio-anthropologists tell us that on average, we used to work as hunters and gatherers for about 20 hours a week. And the rest of the time was spent sitting around the fire. And we had more leisure time is what that meant. Some political theorists have argued that settled living has made us more and more violent century after century as we have industrialized warfare, culminating, of course, in the last century with two world wars. Our move out of hunting and gathering changed all our routines, our religions, our spirituality, our power structures, everything changed. Good and bad came out of it. I wonder who's happier and better off today, the Kalahari Bushman or woman, or the few remaining hunters-gatherers left, or the average Jane or Joe going about their day. Should be noted, by the way, that in recent history, certainly, that most hunters and gatherers have forcibly been moved into settled living or reserves.
If AI combined with quantum computing and massive data can resolve everything from the problem of plastic pollution in the oceans to eliminating warfare, what does this mean for the nation states of the world?
Yeah, it's perhaps the trickiest of all the ethics questions, AI and government. What are the very far-reaching implications of having an AI-run government?
Maybe we won't need human politicians at all. Wait, Ray, I think I hear applause.
It's possible, but I'd worry that if all decisions were reflective of the people's will, that it could turn into mob rule or the tyranny of the masses. New checks and balances would have to be created to ensure freedoms, privacy, and enlightened democratic continuity. Complete rethink would be necessary.
Do you think AI or an AI-run world government could end individual nation states?
The very idea of a world government worries a lot of people, sane and insane. But an AI-run world government might not care what you or I think. It might conclude that global governance is the best way to tackle any number of problems. It may, for example, eliminate all the world's armies and use the resources instead to build an earth and space-based defensive system to ensure Earth's defenses against mass extinction type events like meteor threats. Perhaps it might successfully propose a 10-year fishing ban on all the world's oceans to allow sea life to recover. It's like a parent with a child. It may make decisions it deems are in our best interest despite our kicking and screaming.
I agree, Ray. The idea of a benevolent entity that would decide to save our fisheries is great. However, therein lies the rub. humans didn't make that decision. Massive surveillance states have far more big data than at their disposal than do democratic societies that safeguard their citizens' data and privacy. Whoever becomes the leader in data and quantum computing could become the ruler of the world.
Of course, AI has been weaponized, and so the battlefield will now be fielded by autonomous weapons and killer robots, auxiliaries that can carry equipment, resupply, and make split-second decisions. Commanders will have increasingly unparalleled access to real-time data to better assess and act upon any decision, assuming the commanders will even be human. Have you seen those dancing Boston Dynamic robots on YouTube, Spencer?
Yeah, I have. They're pretty amazing. Ray, have you seen those Japanese companion slash sex bots?
No, I haven't. Okay. Are they like lifelike?
Yeah, pretty lifelike, Ray. Pretty lifelike. A little scary. They
like
can read your...
They'd be like inflatable AI, artificial inflatables.
Yeah, that'll work. Yeah. Oh, you know what? I think we could market them here. Okay, stop. They can read your facial expressions and intimations in your voice and respond accordingly. They're completely autonomous, which gives, given what we're currently going through, that's probably a blessing in disguise, because there's a lot of people caught in isolation that are struggling with our current social isolation policies. But getting back to AI.
Maybe you'll be able to get a date.
finally, right? Yeah, just don't tell my neighbors. But getting back to AIs and their military application, as if swarms of drones aren't enough for us to worry about, a recent report by the National Security Commission on Artificial Intelligence in the U.S. identified mentally and physically augmented adversaries and AI-engineered pathogens among a few of the multi-adversarial AI threats on the horizon.
Oh, man. Just a few, you say? This brings us to gene editing and the rise of the superhumans. Humans with enhanced cognitive and physical abilities will emerge. First, gene editing will eliminate troublesome genes and ailments or hereditary genetic diseases for patients. But it won't be long before it's used to augment humans to create superhumans, at least for those who can afford it. Spencer?
Again, I think this is already happening. If you have the resources, you can purchase the tech, bio or otherwise, to enhance you, your offspring, your workforce, or your manufacturing plant. Your products, whether biological or mechanical, will be smarter, stronger, and better positioned for the next augmentation or improvement than your competitors.
Wow, for the next iteration. Is an AI a threat to the human species?
That's a great question. An entity that has access in real time to all human knowledge, whether that past or present, has never, at least to our knowledge, existed. This entity will be able to work out equations that were previously deemed impossible to resolve. And they'll be able to find the resolution for these equations in nanoseconds. It will have answers to global changes and questions in fractions of a second. Having that access to this knowledge is one thing. But being able to manipulate this knowledge and bend it to your will is another. I would like to transform your question, and I pose this. Are we a threat to an AI?
The old story goes that sabotage, the French word sabot for wooden clogs, came about from workers throwing their shoes in machinery that was threatening their livelihood. I don't know how true that story is, by the way. But since the Industrial Revolution, Luddites, this feeling of being threatened by new tech is not new. Most people believe AI is a double-edged sword. On the one hand, many believe it can save humanity or at least dramatically improve our lives. And on the other, many believe it could destroy or even dominate or even enslave us. Most people in AI who derive their livelihood from AI say, unsurprisingly, that there's nothing to worry about. What were you saying, by the way, about Elon Musk before the show there?
Oh, yeah. One of Elon Musk's amazing projects is called Neuralink. It's worth paying attention to, particularly in the context of this discussion. Neuralink aims to develop symbiotic technology, a type of computer interface that will connect the human brains to tech. So ultimately, if we can't beat them, we can join them, so to speak.
Wow. What do you think this is like a new life form that's being created? What do you think of that?
I think so, Ray. I think we need to call a spade and really identify what we've done. I think we've done this. We've breached or brought into this world a new life form.
You know, I really agree with that last statement you made, the mission or goal from Neuralink there, that it's best we join them or else we'll get left behind. Look how we've treated every other species on Earth that we've come into contact with. The only animals we treat with a modicum of respect are cats and dogs. And even that's not even universal. Well, look what we've done to other humans who have had less firepower than us or anyone we deem a threat. That's why I get concerned. If they imitate us, we're in trouble. The only case I've actually seen where a superior species treats a less developed species well is after first contact there in Star Trek, where the Vulcans make contact with humans. You remember that one?
Yeah, I do. That's a good show. This is what Musk had to say about AI, and I quote, "I have exposure to the most cutting-edge AI, and I think people should be really concerned about it. AI is a fundamental risk to the existence of human civilization." That's Musk talking.
When Musk and Stephen Hawking say the same thing, we need to listen. Check out what Stephen Hawking had to say. Quote, "It will either be the best thing that's ever happened to us, or it'll be the worst thing. If we're not careful, it very well may be the last thing. Whereas the short-term impact of AI depends on who controls it, the long-term impact depends on whether it can be controlled at all. The real risk with AI isn't malice, but competence. A superintelligent AI will be extremely good at accomplishing its goals. And if those goals aren't aligned with ours, we're in trouble. You're probably not an evil ant hater who steps on ants out of malice. But if you're in charge of a hydroelectric green energy project, and there's an anthill in the region to be flooded, too bad for the ants. Let's not place humanity in the position of the ants. We may face an intelligence explosion that ultimately results in machines whose intelligence exceeds ours by more than ours exceeds that of snails," end quote.
Wow. To be honest, the more I looked into this, the more questions I'm left with, man.
That's exactly my same thoughts on this subject. Every area of that I looked into researching this, I just came up with more questions than answers.
Because it's uncharted territory for humanity. Never been here before.
We've only just scratched the surface here, and it looks like we're out of time already for this week's show. Spencer?
Thanks again, Ray, and thanks to all our listeners.
Thank you very much, Spencer. And to our listeners, a huge thank you. Thanks to you, our little podcast community is growing. Subscribe or follow to remember where to find us. Feel free to leave a comment or topic suggestion through the voice message feature, or if you can't find it, by going to the Vancouver Current Worldwide Facebook page or the website under the podcasts tab. Have a great rest of your day. New shows every Wednesday. Catch you next time, and thank you again.